Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's what we've been waiting for.
It's Friday.
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 TGIF.
And that can only mean one thing.
The weekend is landing.
It's time for the Reardon Round Table.
Yes, that is correct.
Sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust.
Now, here's your host, Mark Reardon, on KMOX.
All right, here we go for a Friday roundtable. The panel is assembled. Jane Duker proudly wearing her Billiken colors this afternoon as SLU gets set to take on, who are they playing in the first? I should know this probably. But
Virginia Tech.
Yeah. Virginia Tech. Buzz Williams' team. Mm-hmm. I like Buzz. He looks like one of the Three Stooges, but used to coach Marquette. So we're going to have Stu Durando from the Post on in the next hour. I got clipped by a listener yesterday for not paying enough attention to SLU.
And
completely appropriate criticism of me.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm a Mizzou guy. I don't mean... No, it is a criticism.
But I'm
it is legitimate.
And a Billiken.
So I want to thank that listener because I should be giving a lot of attention. This is exciting.
Great.
They went on this amazing run in the tournament. So Stu's going to come on from San Jose. I almost said San Jose me because I'm so used to saying that. A little bit later. A little
that
bit later,
loud.
A little bit later this afternoon. Well, haven't you ever said San?
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah,
right,
but
there we go.
I try not to do it on the radio, but you know, that's just me.
No, you just cuss on the radio. We know how you are, Jane.
Wow.
All right, so we're going to get
go
into.
Bills.
We'll talk about SLU, and there've been a couple upsets today. We'll pass some of those along. I'm embarrassed, and I think I heard you say this earlier. I didn't even do a bracket this year. I got so busy.
Yeah, I didn't do a bracket, but I mean, I'm all Bills, so it doesn't matter.
All right, we'll see what happens here. We are joined also on the roundtable by Joe Holloman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Joe, how are you?
Good, Mark. Yourself?
Good to see you. And Lewis Reed, the president of the Board of Aldermen, worked back into the roundtable panel after a grueling campaign and a victory a couple of weeks ago.
It's glad to be back. I am so glad to be back.
You might not be glad after today's show.
Yes,
because,
be,
and this we're going to start on a serious note, Lewis, and I know that you're not going to be able to provide all these answers, but this is pretty serious. You had a shooting right at the corner here last night.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy on the Metrolink platform in Maplewood that got beat up today. We know what happened in East St. Louis. Obviously, some of these things happen outside of the city of St. Louis, but violent crime continues to be a big challenge. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, I'm going down to Cherokee Street tonight for dinner with my daughter, who's 4 years old. There's a part of me that has second thoughts about that after what happened the other day on Cherokee Street.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to think that I'm going during the daytime, and that is not typically an area that has been, at least recently, had a reputation for violent crime. But, you know, you get into these conversations, Lewis, with people outside of the area in West County that say they don't want to come downtown because of crime, and it's hard to defend them against that position.
Yeah, and, you know, I completely understand your apprehension and apprehension of people who watch the news, who see a lot of these things happen. You know, but the city of St. Louis, you know, I've been pushing this idea of Operation Cure Violence and Operation Ceasefire. We have to have a comprehensive end-to-end proven and data-driven public safety plan put in place, which is why I continue to push those two. So I'm going to continue to push both of those plans. Those plans have worked all across the country. You look at what it's doing in New Orleans.
So you and I have talked about this before. Can you briefly describe how that might be different from the approach that we're taking right now?
Yeah, what these major plans do, they tie together every aspect of public safety, and they start by saying you cannot just arrest your way out of the problem. You're going to need partners, which include neighborhood organizations, nonprofits, every city agency, everything from their parks departments to your health department, and so on and so forth. Police department, the Justice Department, and everybody working together. They know that roughly 70% of the violent crimes that happen within the metropolitan area are committed by 1% of the population.
Yep.
So they start by identifying that 1% of population, and then there is a very systematic way of beginning to break down those groups and change those groups internally so that those violent groups began to change, right? And it's a big plan. It's not something that you can talk about in 5 minutes and cover, right?
No, and I understand that.
But they have proven to work all across the country. East St. Louis did a form of one of these plans last year, and they drove their violent crime rate by over 42%.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, despite what happened the other day, you don't hear about a lot of murders in East St. Louis, certainly not as much as we have and used to, right?
Yeah.
North St. Louis is not East St. Louis.
Yeah, Stockton, California, New Orleans. I mean, just go down the list. Cities all across the country now have deployed these plans. We should not be in the practice of remaking the wheel, trying to figure out what works and put a handful of things together.
I know, but we always talk about these things and plans and implement it, and it never seems to either be implemented or nothing seems to improve. Now, in fairness, you know, if you do really look at historical trends when it comes to crime, there is less violent crime than there was, for example, in the 80s. And I think even the 90s.
We hear more about, I think, that, you know, than we used to.
And that might be the nature of the media. But Joe, you're a St. Louis City guy, and this probably frustrates you to no end when you keep hearing about the hurdles that we have. There's two things at work here. Look, it's a bad reputation for the city, but people are dying too. So maybe we should think about that.
Well, and I think that's where the frustrating part comes in. 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, when I would talk to folks from the county and they'd say, "Oh, you live in the city. You know, that's dangerous. I don't go down there at night." And I'd say, "Oh, come on." You know, now I'm starting to see their point. And that's unfortunate because I've always considered myself to be, it's not as bad and our numbers are skewed because the city's separate from county. And all those reasons that we kind of said it's not as bad as we think. It is, maybe, or at least it's worse than the people who didn't want to think it was bad are seeing it. You know, the media, you know, they say, well, you know, the media covers it more. I'm only going to say, I'm only going to call that one. We've always covered crime,
yes,
because if it bleeds, it leads. So the idea that the press is making more out of murders
there's just more
than
press.
It used to, we always did.
Yeah. I don't think, yeah.
There's more media.
Don't even get me started on social media and how it spreads things and inflates things and then 24 hours goes away. I also believe in comprehensive plans, but I think sometimes what happens, and I've never been on with Mr. President here before, but...
Oh, you haven't? Oh.
No, I never
have. We bring
have.
People
so
together here,
cool.
As you know, Joe.
But, you know, I get what the more government organizations, and I'm not sure my view toward government in general could be any lower than it is now.
Well, but, you and the rest of the country,
right. Well, but you get... The more political organizations that come in this, you're going to look at this... And then it's going to be this political consideration and that political consideration. And maybe we need more meetings. What you need to do is stop the shooting and stop the bleeding. And I get you can't arrest your way out of it, but you have to show people that we've got a presence out there. And people don't want to talk, well, we don't want a police presence. Yeah, we do. In the bad areas, we need a heavy police presence.
Yeah, Joe, that's not what I mean when I say you cannot arrest your way out of a problem. That statement is meant to begin to have people broaden their thoughts in terms of public safety as a whole. Because if we don't get in front of it, if we are not getting some of these young kids off the streets and actually employed, if we're not investing in our rec centers so that these kids are getting, you know, they're being brought up in more productive activities, we're not going to see an end to it, right? So these broad-reaching plans address public safety from the front end, the midterm, and also the back end. And that's what you need.
But
you
is
need
there a resistance at City Hall or with Jimmy Edwards to going in the direction? Because they're doing some of the things that you're talking about already.
Well, I mean, if you look at, like, you know, when you talk about, and I agree with you, that you have a short-term problem where you have to get the most dangerous off the street.
Exactly.
I mean, that's not negotiable. I mean, and I think they are, and I think the feds have gotten involved with the, what do they call it, the quadrant or the corner, whatever
that,
they
are. That triangle.
The triangle or rectangle, whatever it is, which is good, and they're handling it upwards of 500 or 600 cases of drugs and guns, and we need that. It's sad we can't do that within our own city, but hey, we'll take it wherever we can. And so I get, and then the medium term, like you say, we have to start looking toward trying to get maybe some of these middle schoolers and whatnot. And then you have the long term where you try to prevent crime early. And I totally on board with that. But I don't think that people are doing things in a coordinated fashion. It seems
That's
to me
thing.
that's where the breakdown comes. I don't think anybody disagrees that you have to look at things somewhat holistically if you want to break the cycle. But we don't have a lot of people talking to one another, and I don't, you know, I mean, that's, I'm not sure what fixes that.
What fixes it is a coordinated plan. I mean, that's what you just outlined is Operation Ceasefire and Operation Cure Violence. It's a coordinated effort across everybody, like I said earlier, nonprofits, the Justice Department, the feds, the police department, the courts, everybody, neighborhoods, they're all involved in the process.
And if you give people a plan, then they don't have to fight with each other, or they don't have to have personalities. They go with the plan.
No, but the plan itself and the structure within the plan and the data-driven piece and the communications network that's set up amongst all of these entities
pieces,
that are out there working to address the issues of public safety allows us to use all of those resources in a much, much more effective and coordinated fashion so that we're actually hitting the mark. Right now, here's the thing. Right now, I think it's important for everybody to understand. Everybody that's out there working to try to address the issues of public safety, we have to assume that they're doing the best they can with all the resources they have. Mm-hmm. But how do we get more out of those resources? We get more out of those resources by coordinating and fine-tuning what we're doing with those resources.
So who coordinates it? Is it Jimmy Edwards? Is it who sets up the plan and who coordinates it? Because, I mean, I think everybody agrees that's a, you know.
In my mind, one of the inherent flaws of multi-jurisdictional operations, it's as clumsy in its operation as it is in its pronunciation. Because you're going to have the states going to argue with the feds, who are going to argue with this city, that's going to argue with that county, and we want this and we want that. And at the end of the day, as always seems to happen in the larger the government project, it doesn't become about the problem you're wanting to solve. It's whose ox is getting gored, who's got the prime spot here.
But other cities have done it.
And I know on paper, Mr. President, that's not how it's meant to be. Yeah. But you get that many bureaucrats and politicians involved, that's how it's going to end up.
But other cities have done it.
Joe, and I understand the cynic in you says that, and I appreciate the cynic in you.
Joe Holland's cynical?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. But here's what I'm going to say to that, right? The jury's out on that. The data speaks for itself. It works, period. Right. So let's, you know, I'm not going to debate whether it works or not, because it's been proven. The Justice Department ranks this program as the highest ranking program that they have on record today that works. It has had studies done since the 90s. Right. So it works. We have to decide if we're going to commit to it, and if we're going to commit our resources to it, and we're going to change the way we're doing business. If we're not going to do that, we should not be surprised next year when we have the same, you know, another Monday where 10 people are shot.
Yeah.
Right? That should not be a surprise.
Hang on. We got to take a break. We're coming back. Segment 2 of the Roundtable. Much more to go this afternoon on KMOX. Hang in there.
Now, back to the Reardon Roundtable. Sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust. Once again, your host, Mark Reardon on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Every time I invite Holloman to the Roundtable, I end the hour thinking, why did I invite Holloman to the Roundtable? Because he gives me so much grief in the break.
It's out of
people can't even hear the amount of grief that he gives me.
It's
but I still
epic.
Love him. I
it's
still
pretty
love
epic.
Him.
I kid because I love
him. I know you do. Yeah. I know you do. All right, so I don't even, we talked about all the serious stuff in crime. I'm not sure exactly where to head right now. We're under the impression, and I don't think it's going to happen today, but look, anything could happen, that the Mueller report is going to be
what
released.
What is that based on?
Well, I don't
know. I've yet
know.
To figure out, like, everyone's like, imminent. And I'm like, well, how did...
Yeah, who said
that?
Imminent?
Who
Where
said
did
that
I come from?
I think there's a feeling that maybe it's going to be dumped on a Friday, but
because
nothing's happening right now.
Because they have people TMZing right outside the offices, and they saw people walk out with boxes. And we're at now. And I'm like, we don't have any idea.
Well, I'll tell you what. My wife says the reason it's imminent, because Donald Trump brought up McCain again. That's
why. Well, he is going, usually, and I've said this before.
Well, as far as a distraction?
As a distraction.
Well, that's happened. Goes a little cuckoo when he finds out that he's going to be in trouble again. So,
yeah. And that's real cuckoo.
Yeah, and he's been doing some real cuckoo stuff,
okay,
which makes me think he's getting nervous.
And we'll get to cuckoo and all that. Just hold one thing at a time here. All right, so the Mueller report, and Joe, I'll start with you on this. If this shows no collusion, wasn't this about collusion? Now, I know a lot of people apparently broke crimes and or broke the law and they're going to prison, all that. I'm fine with that. But if this thing shows no collusion, isn't that a win for the president?
I, certainly. I mean, a win. on its first basis, on the first, this is why we're doing this. If it doesn't prove collusion, yes, it's a win. That will, but this, where I'm at with this report is I almost at the point where I don't want to talk about it anymore. You issue your report, I'll read it.
Right.
Because one side is going to spin this as a hands-down, clear-cut victory for Trump. The other one is going to find out that this guy is the worst man since Attila the Hun, no matter what that report says. So I'm going to read the report, and then I'm going to come back in here sometime, right, and if you want to ask me what I think about it. But I'm done. It's coming out. It's not coming out. It shows this. It doesn't show that. Just show me the report.
Well, the one thing that annoys me about you amongst many is that you look at the facts, Joe, and shame on you for doing that, all right? Because you did it with Ferguson. We both did it with Ferguson, and you know how that turned out. But when it comes to this, I saw Katie Turr. Well, I think we should get the report.
I think we should get the report, but I think it's already, I mean, because of the new, special counsel law, that we're going to get a summary from Bill Barr.
Well, that would be bad. I think that would be bad for everyone.
I think we ought to prepare ourselves as citizens that they're going to cleanse this thing, and it's going to be, I think there will probably be litigation to get the full report to come out. Mueller doesn't have any authority, so what's going to happen is he has to turn his in, and he's going to do that, and then the process is going to take over.
Okay, but Janie, I'm going to call her Janie.
We're going to have to sue to get this report out.
I'm going to call her Janie
just to be
condescending here. Janie, my good friend, you've been talking about impeachment and collusion and all these things. Katie Turr said last night, I saw this clip that was on Twitter. She's on MSNBC. She said, look, it doesn't matter if this proves collusion or not because there's still plenty of things to look at. Well, I think it does matter whether there's collusion. Not to say that anything else that may be reported on or dug up or something that might be revealing here isn't important. I would certainly take a look at it along the lines of what Joe said. But if this thing does not prove collusion, that is a vindication for the White House or for the president.
Oh, I disagree because we're finding out now.
Of course you disagree.
Well, of course. But we're finding out now that Jared and Ivanka did more than what, Trump and all the Republicans wanted to put Hillary in jail for. So, I mean, it's all relative.
That's nonsense.
Oh, no, when you're using the WhatsApp app to talk to the prince, to talk to foreign leaders, and then you say, oh, I take a screenshot. I mean, that is the same kind of stuff. You're talking about, whatever it is you're talking about, which could be classified information if you're talking to another world leader, and you're talking to them on a WhatsApp app, and you're taking a screenshot on your iPhone, and you want to talk about security, Hillary Clinton was supposed to go to jail for that. And we're hearing now that, they're using and doing this all the time.
You still are struggling with that loss. You cannot get over it, can you?
No, I just find the hypocrisy.
A lot of us are still struggling with that.
The hypocrisy I'm struggling with more. Both sides.
We're not getting
that report. We all need to come to terms with the fact that we are not going to get that report for a long time.
And the report is you come in here and Jane's going to find every bit of that report that says stuff bad about Donald Trump.
Yes.
And Republicans are going to find everything in there that exonerates him of something. And they're both going to claim victory. And
I think that's where we're heading.
Let's both claim victory
that's where
and call
we're
it a day.
Donald Lewis. Trump will declare victory. He's already declaring victory and it's not even out yet.
Well, that's because every time you've marked him up for a loss, he's won. Every time, he wasn't going to get elected, Jane.
Okay. Well,
and then he was going to be impeached within the first 6 months.
Yes.
Then he was going to be impeached in the first year. Then it was going to be the first year and a half. You guys are going to stay on this until one day you hopefully are going to be right. And I can almost picture,
What's wrong with that?
It's 7.5 years into the Donald Trump thing. They're going, we got him now. We got him now.
Oh, that reminds me of Whitewater.
Hey,
and Hillary will be there clutching on, going,
we're
yes.
We're in for the long haul. For the long haul, we will never give up.
But don't you think, do you actually think, to say that issues relating to the Constitution and crimes that may or may not have been committed by people in the White House, that's certainly important. But there is also a part of me, and your speaker, your leader in the House, Nancy Pelosi, is backing off impeachment right now. So what's your reaction to that? Many Democrats disagree with her on that front.
Yeah, and Nancy is backing off from my understanding because she believes it would be a huge distraction and it will take them away from delivering their agenda, their people's agenda. And I think it's important that
they stay focused. We're going to talk about the agenda in the next segment, by the way.
I think it's very important that she sticks to that agenda. And when she was here in St. Louis, it was great to have a talk with her and hear.
Did you sit down with her?
Oh, she's awesome, by the way. She's awesome.
I know she was hanging with Congressman Clay. Were you in the entourage there?
Yes, I was in the
two
entourage.
Two words I would never, ever consider saying about Nancy Pelosi. She's awesome.
She's awesome.
Although,
you'd appreciate that.
I'm actually always curious because I do feel like there are people that get demonized in the media all the time that if you meet them in person, you'd probably be just fine with them. on both
she
sides.
Got, she got yeah. somewhere for a reason. I mean, she's, you know, you could say what you want about her, but she's obviously
she's a skilled politician, and, I would say that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so you don't get to be speaker without having skills.
Yeah. She said that she's going to create a group called the Too Hot to Handle, right? And
let me guess, AOC?
No. Too Hot to Handle. And the issues that they really want to push, they're going to make them too hot to handle. So when they land on the president's desk, when the House and the Senate Republicans get a hold of them, they're going to be too hot to handle, and they're going to have to pass them. And I think that is a great strategy.
All right, hang tight. We're coming back with more. We'll talk a little bit about that Democrat agenda and the new entrance to the presidential race and a couple other topics from around here in Missouri. When we come back, Joe Holloman, Lewis Reed, the president of the Board of Aldermen, and Jane Duker, Janie, I'm calling her this afternoon on KM1.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This is the Reardon Roundtable.
Sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust.
With your host, Mark Reardon.
All right, welcome back.
KMOX.
Sorry about that, Dave King. Welcome back. Third segment of the Reardon Roundtable. Jane Duker is here. Also, the president of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed, and Joe Holloman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Lewis, in the last segment, you mentioned the Democrats' agenda, and Joe and I are going to maybe just keep a little checklist here, I think, see if you can respond. That would include raising taxes on everyone, rolling back the tax cut that everyone got, killing babies in the third trimester. Was that something that Nancy talked about?
getting
rid of airplanes.
Expanding
the Supreme Court, reparations, getting rid of the elect. That's your agenda. You understand that, right?
You guys have a different set of lenses on when you're looking at
that. Alman, help me out here, man.
Way to put it. Thank you.
I think the thing is, and we're talking about, and as much as I disagree with some stances that Speaker Pelosi has, she's a seasoned veteran legislator. But right now, I mean, we said, well, she's backed off of Donald Trump. She's worried about her own mess because there's people like Ocasio-Cortez and his group that are making the Democratic Party embrace every far-left proposal because it's coming up on primary time. They're getting geared up. So you've got to get that far-left support, the social justice warrior crowd behind you. And it's no different than the Republicans do with that far right wing that they want to get to get you through your primary. And that's who they're playing to now. So, I mean, the whole green plan and, you know, I thought it was funny with the green plan with the airplanes when it talks about doing the airplanes and the senator from Hawaii, whose name I'm now blanking on.
Mazie Hirono.
Who doesn't want to come out and say, because she's in the same party, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard.
But she said well, that'll make it interesting,
sure
right?
The support that would have in Hawaii. You know, it's all political. It's a political game, and they're trying to isolate the people they know are going to be Democrats and that they know are going to be Republicans. They win their primary, and then usually, then there comes the little traipsing into the middle so they can get normal people to vote for them. Yes, I said normal
people. But, you know, and it seems like this is a conversation we have every week. The if Uncle Joe gets into the race, and seemingly from last weekend's comments, he might get in. And I guess they're talking about, Jane, I don't know how much you know about this, but there's this at least potential for him to name his running mate, and people think that would be Stacey Abrams, who lost the race down in Georgia. Some people think that's a gimmick. Maybe, I don't, it is odd if he would do that.
It just doesn't seem like good strategy. I mean, I would get through, and, you know, I think you're naming your running mate acts like you think there's not even going to be a primary. I'm not sure it's a great optic. I don't think strategically that would be something I would recommend, because I mean, you're just asking for opposition. Why? You know, it's hard enough.
Well, that may have been a trial balloon, too, and then everyone's reacting negatively.
Dude, don't. Yeah. I mean, and it's not going to enhance your chances. And if anything, it's going to detract, because now you're responsible not just for yourself, but a whole other human being. And I do think that some of these people that are running, I mean, they're not tried and tested yet. They're just not tested. Stacey Abrams was not tested yet, not nationally. And I think it's always a better idea to let these people get tested, let them get out there, and let them stand on their own 2 feet and see if they've got what it takes. I wouldn't do it. And I think that some of these people, that everybody, all the shiny objects that people are looking at, they're going to fade. And, you know, so that's why I'm just not ready to deal with this yet until it starts getting serious.
And, you know, having run in much, much smaller elections before, right, even on a local level, the more you give people to shoot at, the more they shoot at, right? So when you bring another person to the forefront and
you
run
as,
you make the target bigger. You know, like, for example, the reason in my campaigns now, I never announce who my campaign manager is, because the last time I announced who my campaign manager is, Joe did some research. Joe, who's sitting to the right of me, did some research and found out in high school that this guy in high school joined the, you know, the Communist Party, and that became
the story on that.
And that became the talk. That became the talk for, you know, for a month of a 4 month campaign. Yeah. That was the talk. So I don't announce that anymore, right? So can you imagine
maybe you should vet your people better?
Yeah.
Well, I was just old enough to remember communist as a bad thing.
Don't say red.
And can you imagine on to the level of a presidential campaign? Every time that person shows up at McDonald's opposed to Hardee's, that becomes a story. So, yeah, I think it's a bad strategy.
Have you ever taken your mom to Deep Throat? Like John Hickenlooper from college? I don't know.
Back up on that sentence.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Is it okay if Lewis and I just stay out of here?
I will stay out
Dave
of this
Klein, country. I want you to mark that tape. That was weird.
It's in the public domain. John Hickenlooper. He wrote about it in his book. He was asked about it on a talk show.
I took my mom to Deep Throat.
To the movie Deep Throat.
Well, okay, thank you.
Okay, the movie.
Clear it up.
The movie. I thought we were talking about the Watergate source.
Right.
That is a weird. Is that not a weird story?
That was based on
I'm not familiar with this.
You liar! But that's okay. You can say that. I'll give you cover, Joe Holloman.
You know,
because I like you.
The thing about Jane. The thing about that whole story. That's, you know, there's a lot of aspects that are weird, and I guess you give him credit because he came out, and no one can say, "Hey, you took your mom to the movie Deep Throat in 1972." But it's not only that they went to the movie, but that she stayed the whole time during the movie. Now, for people who missed this yesterday, he said that she was alone. I don't even know if he had a father, but she was alone. He was going to a movie with his friends. He didn't realize, he knew it was an X-rated movie, but didn't realize that there would be that much. I don't know. It's that would be a judgment issue for a guy. You know, you talk about Donald Trump all you want, but maybe, I know he's 19 years old, but still.
I was mortified because when I was relatively young, remember the movie 10, Bo Derek?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Hilarious movie.
Yeah. I never really considered the dialogue of that movie.
Because it had, you know, Bo Derek and who was the funny guy?
Dudley Moore.
Dudley Moore, yeah. Who's hilarious. And Julie Andrews. I mean, mm-hmm. Sound of Music. So, you know, we didn't know that it was going to be as racy as
but
it was.
You didn't hear
and
what
I
said.
Was with my dad and I was like, okay.
That movie had dialogue, you're telling me?
No, that happened to me. What do you mean?
No, I'm saying the movie itself had dialogue.
Yes. Oh, yeah, no, it's still, that's what I'm saying. This is a much different discussion.
That's because she watched it on a much higher level than you did,
exactly.
Mark, apparently.
All right, we got to take a break. We're coming back with more in a moment on KMOX.
Now, back to the Reardon Roundtable.
Sponsored by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust.
Once again, your host, Mark Reardon, on KMOX.
Just quickly on the NCAA tournament, this is stunning. And I would expect at the end of the game, the result's going to be very different. But Virginia, who became the first team last year in the history of the NCAA tournament to lose to a 16 seed, is in the process of losing by 11 points right now in the first half. It's 5 minutes left in the first half, so plenty of time. But I believe that Tony Bennett, the coach of Virginia, might want to run for the locker room really fast if he loses that game, because he may not make it out of there with his head on his body. So we'll see how that turns out. That's interesting. All right, so I've been very confused, and there are things, obviously, Jane, that do confuse me and disappoint me about this White House and this president, one of which has been this attack and these attacks, renewed attacks on John McCain, Joe. And I don't understand it. I don't get the point. I think it only hurts the president. It is weird. He's got this thing, though he doesn't like him, and I get it, but at a certain point, maybe you just put it behind you. Most Republicans, I think it's inappropriate. Very few of them, however, willing to go on the record and say something because they're seeking political cover.
Well, you know, I mean, honestly, this really goes outside of politics almost.
Right.
I think it is.
Back to the old adage of you don't talk ill about the dead.
It's kind of human decency.
Exactly. And like, and that's what I don't understand because, yes, there are people who I have not cared for over the years, but I am not going to get into publicly insulting them after they're gone.
When they can't fight back.
After they can't fight back. And, yes, clearly you believed that John McCain did you dirty politically, made some promises. You know, that's politics sometimes. And you can hate him all you want in private.
Shut
curse his name every day, you know, to yourself. But keep it to yourself because publicly, and the things that can't be refuted is that agree or disagree with him, he served faithfully for how many years? Not only as a U.S. senator, he served this country and was a prisoner of war. Right. So at the very least, respect that and shut up.
We like people who go to war and don't you know, draft dodge.
Yeah, think
well,
about
by the way, that exposed that's hypocrisy right there. I mean, no matter what you think, and I don't think John McCain was perfect, and I wasn't a huge fan overall. I think he got a bad rap. Over, you know, for the most part, because his votes were very consistent with Republicans over the years. He did break on some of the big issues. But there is, again, it goes back to the human decency part of this.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You look at Trump going on the rant and saying, well, you know, I gave him this great funeral and never got a thank you. I mean,
which he did. It was like just a lie.
But
they recognized him at the funeral, and I'm like, but, dude, what planet are you on?
But who's carrying around that? I mean, if you're carrying around that kind of animosity against a dead guy, and
but
he
you're
says,
the
I
one,
don't,
Lewis,
don't,
that telegraphed this at the beginning of the roundtable, and you said maybe it was just a distraction move.
It has to be.
Well, he's sitting in his room thinking about this because he's like, I'm going to be in trouble. This report's coming. He's stressed out, and he's thinking about the dossier, and he just can't stop obsessing.
I only disagree with you on this point. Is I think he could achieve the same by being incredibly vicious toward an Ocasio-Cortez or a Nancy Pelosi. I mean, the idea of picking McCain seems to be
not only is
so
it,
off the right. Clearly, you don't like him. I get that. But it's off the chart.
It's not even politically helpful.
And he made a statement. He said, "You know, I don't care for him. You know, currently, I don't care for him, but maybe someday I will." Well, those days are past because you can't mend the fence. The guy's dead.
You know, it's interesting that Meghan McCain said this week, and I think there's something to this. She said, if my dad were aware that, or if he would have known 8 months after he passed away that the president was going to be ripping into him like this and that he was still going to be dominating the news coverage, that he'd probably laugh about that. And I think he would to know that he got underneath Trump's skin as much as he did.
Well, he wouldn't do it because if John McCain were alive, Trump would not have the cojones to actually take him on face-to-face.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I think he would.
Not in this way, because John McCain would respond.
And what it does is it opens up not only the ugliness that clearly exists in the president's mind when it comes to John McCain. And I've mentioned it on this show before, I do bristle at how folks on the other side of the aisle, if we will, who had nothing nice to say about John McCain when he was running for president, called him a racist, called him a war hawk, now rushed to his defense simply so they can point out Donald Trump's failure.
The big
As I
epiphany.
Said before, the people who talked ill of John McCain when he was running for president and now are going after Donald Trump, you're more like Donald Trump than you are like John McCain. So,
I mean, I think it's fair for anybody to stand up and say what this guy is doing is low rent, it's pathetic, it's wrong. And
you have less standing when you called the man a racist and a war hawk when he was alive
Wait, but that does not excuse Donald Trump's core behavior.
Right.
He's the leader of the free world, and he's talking ill about a dead person.
Well, I believe,
but
I mean, both sides can be wrong.
But Joe,
they're not equal.
They are not equal. They are not equal because
it's hypocrisy.
But well, look, Lewis, here's what I'm told repeatedly, and you know, I took Janie to meet my buddy Ted Nugent in the fall, and Ted says this all the time. Mark, what you don't understand, I heard people say it this week: the people who elected Donald Trump, they don't want that smooth politician who's behaving themselves all the time. They want someone that's going to go fight for them in the trenches and get things done. And I don't give him a pass on the personal behavior. I never have, which is why I didn't vote for him. Mm-hmm. And why I probably wouldn't vote for him again. Although if we have a socialist running, then I think I'm going to commit to voting him. So I'm probably going to vote for him this time. But I have a problem from a variety of perspectives, because I do think that when we get into 2020, let's say there are flaws with a Democratic presidential candidate that may be related to character. You can't criticize. It is off the table. So I came from a perspective where character did matter. But there is something to this notion that the people who really stick with the president, he's got a pretty solid, he's got 90% approval with Republicans right now. And that's a pretty big number, no matter what party you're in. So whatever he's doing, he knows that it's not turning the base off and driving people away from him. So the behavior is not going to change.
Well, the people were silent. I've never heard, I mean, you could have heard a pin drop in that rally, where I think he's used to having people screaming and being hollering for him. And
it was awkward.
It was. And I mean, you could literally hear a pin drop, and that actually surprised me. And it actually heartened me, because I'm like, okay, these people are not. But, you know, the condoning going on, I mean, I don't think it's right. I think Lindsey Graham is just a
Well, John
hypocrite.
McCain was Lindsey Graham's best friend. And for him not to defend Senator McCain was a little weird to me. We're at one more topic
primary.
Left. I want to get to the last
hypocrisy.
Segment here. We have Fritz's Frozen Custard for the panel this afternoon. Cool Cookie Concretes, which is mint and Oreos in vanilla. A Strawberry Blonde Concrete, which is strawberries and marshmallow sauce. Chocolate Reese's Concrete. I went to the West County location last week with my daughter for her birthday treat, which was a lot of fun. And we love Fritz's Frozen Custard with 5 area locations. Mr. Holloman, we got a nice gift yesterday. Let's talk about something fun. We're, I guess, 6 days away from baseball at this point in Milwaukee next Monday. Week and a half away, or a little less than 2 weeks away from our home opener here. The Paul Goldschmidt extension, I certainly thought it was going to happen, but I did not think it was going to happen this soon. I don't think everything's final yet, but wow, that seems like almost too good to be true at this point.
Exactly. That's kind of where I'm at. When they said he signed for 5 years, at first I was like, with who? Everybody's been getting these 10-year mega contracts, and I mean, he's older than the Trouts and the Harpers. I get that. So there's probably not a 10-year deal for a 31-year-old guy. I get that. But the idea that I figured he was going to have to come to St. Louis, and everybody says, well, if he gets here, he'll play. He knows how everybody loves baseball in St. Louis. He's only been here like a month. I mean, yeah, and technically not even still here. He's down in Florida. I mean, so, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I think Goldschmidt's one of the top half dozen ball players in the major leagues, and now we've got him for 5 years, no cut, no trade. And 5 years, maybe he ends his career here. He's 36, 37. He goes to the AL and plays another 4 years as a designated hitter or something. But, yeah, I couldn't have been happier. I was just surprised how quick it came.
You know, I don't think we haven't been exposed to him. I've seen him a little bit in some of the coverage, and he cranked a whopper of a home run the other day. But I think he's a guy, and this is sort of refreshing in this day and age of social media, where he's off that. He concentrates on the game. He works hard, and he didn't want this distraction lingering over the season, because he wants to play baseball and win a championship. And we love that commitment here. So it's awesome for St. Louis, awesome for the Cardinals.
I have a friend who I call him Baseball Joe. We've communicated for years. I haven't seen him in 10 years, but we talk almost every day, email. His brother lives in Arizona, who said, and a big ball fan, said, not only is Goldschmidt one of the best players, everybody on the team loved him.
Right.
Front office loved him. Said he's great and not a problem. I mean, this guy who's just going to come in, be a good ball player. So, and he had said, me and this guy share the bond of we loathe the Cubs. And that's how we started our long-distance mail relationship. He said everybody in Arizona
loved
Goldschmidt.
Wait, wait, wait. You said, wait, I got to be careful here. Just because we don't want things to be misinterpreted. You said long-distance mail.
M-I-L.
Okay.
Really?
All right. Hey,
really?
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Don't judge me.
He splices words. I'm just warning you.
As long as we got the deep throat one on tape,
that's right.
We're good.
And we do. Dave already came in and said that we've got that.
I have this
that's gonna be
theory,
so
too, that Marcell Ozuna is going to play better. Now, he's been injured, too. Play better offensively because of Goldschmidt. A little less pressure on him. And, you know, look, he's going to want to compete just amongst his fellow teammates, too. So I think it's great, and we're ready for baseball, Jane.
And
can't get here soon
enough. You know what? I'm ready for it to be warm with baseball.
I just hope that in like 4 weeks we're not going to be saying, "Oh man, when does the soccer team get here?" Because this team, we've seen teams with high expectations before, not necessarily Cardinals teams, but other teams that are supposed to be spectacular.
It's never all season. We may have some lulls, but we usually get a good spark, even if it's not the best of seasons.
All right, we're out of time. We are, Lewis. You want to get the final word? You got 30 seconds.
Just going to say, I know my assistant Mary Collins got her opening day tickets. She's excited. She is fired up, ready to go.
Well, so, come see us at Kegs and Eggs for our opening day celebration. KMOX.com/kegs. Holloman, good to see you, man.
Good seeing you.
Get on that bike this week, Lewis Reed. Awesome
Absolutely.
To see you. And Jay Duker is going to hang with me in the next hour. We're going to talk a little SLU basketball as well.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.